agenda?
Oh, here. Okay. Good evening, everyone. Just so you know, I am Alan Lamer. I'm acting chair of the Zoning Board of Appeals, and I call this meeting of the Zoning Board of Appeals to order on the 16th day of July, 2025. So the first order of business would normally be the approval of resolutions, but since we don't have a quorum of people who were present at the last meeting, we're going to go directly to the matters at hand.
I'm not sure. I didn't look at the agenda. I know there was. These are. I'm not sure. Did we determine that we were going to follow the agenda, or we're going to go out of order?
We can go out of order because I was asked that.
Since I went to a state law school, I will do it in the order that's printed.
Okay.
So the first order of business is 9 Cheesecote Lane.
Should we podium? It's up to your board.
I would appreciate it if you do, because this way I can hear better on the recording.
Okay. Is this microphone on?
The recording's here from the dais.
Oh, I see. So don't move them.
How does Jenny record? Is she doing it by phone? Or?
No, I'm not.
Her system.
Yeah.
Chair, members of the board. For the record, my name is Daniel Richmond. I'm a partner with the law firm Zarin and Steinmetz, here on behalf of Rachel Lieberman, the applicant for variances for side yard and rear yard bulk requirements in connection with a swimming pool and pool house at 9 Cheesecote Lane. In particular, the applicant seeks relief from the 25-foot setback yard requirement to allow a 5-foot side yard setback and relief from the 30-foot rear yard requirement to allow a 5-foot rear yard setback. The variances are requested by the unique shape and challenging configuration of this lot, which presents planning challenges that prevent the applicant from fully complying with the ordinary bulk requirements. First, the lot has significant steep slope and rock formations that make a large portion of the backyard, which is essentially the backyard over here. You can see the house is over here, access from Cheesecote Lane over here. We're proposing to put the pool house over here, and there's a fish pond, and they're going to be redoing the pavement over here with pervious pavers. The lot shape also limits the ability to place the pool in another location. We respectfully submit that these variance requests should easily pass the applicable area variance balancing test. First, the requested variances will not result in an undesirable change in the character of the neighborhood or a detriment to nearby properties. The homes behind the applicant's house are about 50 feet higher than the pool and the pool house, well below the line of sight. Moreover, there's excessive vegetation. I'll show you. Right, this is looking to the north facing the adjacent parkland. And this is looking to the west, essentially, where the pool will be. You can see there's a slope that essentially blocks it, and in addition, there's an already existing natural vegetation separating it from its neighbors. As a consequence of these conditions and further evidencing the pool house's lack of adverse impact on the community or its neighbors, we have provided your board with letters of support from the four adjacent residential properties, confirming that they do not foresee any disturbances or negative impacts from the pool. The pool and the pool house will have no impact on adjacent parkland. Again, the nearest hiking trail is about 300 feet away. And again, this is the view of the parkland to the north. There's again, obviously, extensive vegetation that would separate it from any view. So there'd be no disruption to the area's visual setting. Second, there's no feasible alternative to achieve the benefits sought by the applicant. Again, as I explained earlier, the unique characteristics of the site prevent the location of the pool and pool house anywhere else on the lot. Third, the requested variances are not substantial. Even if the requested variances were deemed numerically substantial, it is settled law that substantiality is not viewed in the abstract, but rather case law establishes that the totality of the relevant circumstances must be evaluated to determine whether a variance is in fact a substantial one. And as case law establishes, the totality of the circumstances requires your board to look at the actual impact that the requested variances would have on the surrounding community. Accordingly, again, the question is whether substantial, whether a variance is substantial is whether it has an impact on neighborhood community character. And as I just explained a few minutes ago, the pools and pool house will not affect the community because, again, it would be virtually invisible to their neighbors. Fourth, no adverse impacts on the environment or physical conditions from granting the variances. And fifth and finally, to the extent the alleged hardship is deemed self-created, such a determination does not preclude your board from granting the variances under state law. I'm happy to answer any questions your board may have. Again, I believe you got all the letters of support from our neighbors and in your package. Great. And we got a GML letter saying that it's basically a local decision, which I'll say is almost the first time I've seen the county say something.
I have a question. As a result of this proposed plan, what area, what percentage of the lot would be now be impermeable? In other words, what effect would it have on the footprint?
So I think the applicant anticipated your question because part of the application is to remove this area with pervious pavement to keep it under if you're going towards development coverage. This is right. Going to trigger a development coverage variance. They're reducing, again, by using pervious pavement here to, they will be adding some pervious, but this will be reduction. I don't know the total amount, honestly. See, it's on the chart prepared by the, but unfortunately, the planner, Civiltech cannot be here tonight. Lot coverage will remain at 20%. 20% is what's permitted, and 20% is what will result.
I'm not disagreeing with you. As a rule, this board has looked at 20% as the number. Although it's my understanding that the code is 15% plus 5% ancillary, and that's all subject to a lot of interpretation, so 20% is the magic number as far as we're concerned.
And 20% is what we're going to be maintaining.
Any questions?
No.
Okay, so I think since this was the first time on, it would be incumbent upon us if there's a motion to set this down for a public hearing.
Yes.
How am I doing so far?
So far, so good. Shaking the rust off.
been a few months. Okay, do I hear a motion to...
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Baker. Is there a second?
The motion was to be clear. For what date? What do you want to put the...
The third Wednesday of August.
You know, Pete, that, just want to make sure we're all on the same page. We're talking August 20th. Is that correct?
That's what it looks like to me.
Okay.
Second.
Second by Mr. Klein. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion carries 3-0.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is 34 North Ridge. Or did you want to go out of order? You have another matter on?
Just sit.
Okay. Then we're good. 34 North Ridge.
Good evening again, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Again, for the record, my name is Daniel Richmond. I'm a partner with Zarin and Steinmetz. Now appearing before you on behalf of Eliezer Steinmetz at the bottom of the Heights, located at 34 North Ridge Road. We're here in connection with our client's appeal of a notice of violation dated May 9th, 2025, issued in connection with a tent that serves a critical religious function on the property. By way of background, the Chabad of Heights holds regular services, religious services on the site, which until last year were held in a permanent structure. Last year, however, the Chabad's house of worship was completely destroyed in a fire. As a result, the Chabad and the religious community that it serves were in desperate need for a facility in which to conduct their religious services in the interim while they seek a permanent house of worship on the site. So to accommodate this need, last fall, the Village Board of Trustees graciously and correctly approved a special permit to allow the Chabad of the Heights to erect a tent on the site as a temporary house of worship while the Chabad proceeds with a special permit application. Chabad has diligently worked to prepare a special permit application, which has been duly submitted to the Village Board, and we are scheduled to appear before the Village Board this coming Monday in connection with that application. To the point of this appeal, the Chabad of the Heights is seeking a variance from the New York State Department of State to address the notice of violations, concern, and allegation that the state fire code only allows tents to be erected for no more than 180 days within a 12-month period. This week, the Department of State, and I'd like to hand up, should I hand it up to you or to your secretary, however you
want. If you want us to see it, you might as well just hand it up. But.
As you can see from the email I just provided you, the New York Department of State, this week, the Division of Building Standards and Code stated that the variances will be issued this week to allow the tent to remain. This should hopefully negate this, and hopefully we can then work with the building inspector. But in light of this, the Chabad was compelled to file his appeal and respectfully submits that, consistent with your board's affirmative duty to accommodate the subject religious use, that the notice of violation be overturned or at minimum stayed while the Department of State acts. As ample case law establishes, religious uses, such as the tent that the Chabad must use while it pursues a special permit for this permanent structure, must be accommodated, whereas here they pose no threat to the public health, safety, or welfare, because religious uses have a presumptively beneficial impact on the community. Indeed, case law establishes, quote, that while religious institutions are not exempt from local laws, greater flexibility is required in evaluating an application for religious use than an application for another use, and every effort must be made to accommodate the religious use. Accordingly, again, the Department of State has indicated that they will address the issue that the notice of violation appears concerned with. Again, the requirement that a tent can only be up for 180 days in a 12-month period. We expect that variance based on the communication that I just handed up to you this week. And I'm happy to answer any questions your board may have.
The only question I have is, what is the relief that you're seeking from this board?
We are seeking either that the notice of violation be overturned or vacated in light of, again, the impending variance from the state, which goes directly to the heart of the notice of violation. The alternative, because we did file this a couple months ago when we were, during in the process,
was that it be stayed for the Department of State to act, and I just handed you an email indicating the Department of State's indicating they will act this week.
If the Department of State issues its variance, does it render the application moot or no?
If the building inspector would withdraw his notice of violation, it would. I mean, it would seem that in light of that, that the building inspector would have to issue, you know, rescind or would moot it. I think the village would have to say that. It wouldn't be for me to decide.
Clearly, but I'm just wondering what your position would be on
that. Would certainly be my position. Again, that the issuance of the state variance, which we think is coming this week, should render this whole appeal moot. It has a technicality in those evaluations, either to be withdrawn or overturned by this board.
So it sounds to me like it's not moot yet. I think the prudent thing to do would be to schedule for a hearing in August, and then if there's change in circumstances or what have you, then, you know, in between, well, then those can be dealt with as they come. But as of right now, we see that it looks like it's coming. You still have your application. It's an appeal. You know, hearings are required on appeals. You might as well schedule. My advice would be to schedule the public hearing, and then we could see what happens in advance of the August meeting, if it makes sense to proceed. The hearing could be opened, and the applicant can state his case, including whatever's happened in the interim.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we get it, I will advise you and the board that it's been issued, and maybe we can talk offline and see if it's necessary to go forward with the public hearing. But again, it's not my call.
Right. So I think, yeah, it makes sense to go ahead and schedule for a public hearing. That way it's moving, the application is moving before this board, and you know, regardless of what happens in the next, you know, few weeks in terms of what's anticipated.
The motion? August 20th, move to public hearing.
There's a motion by Mr. Baker to set this matter down for a public hearing.
Second.
And there's a second by Mr. Klein. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And just to be clear, the motion is to set the matter down for a public hearing at the next regularly scheduled meeting on August 20th.
Just as a matter of procedure, does your board prepare the notice, or should we prepare the notice for the public hearing?
Typically, the clerk would prepare the notice and then get it published and then provide it to you to do the mailings.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. We can work with Mr. Orange as well. I know Mr. Orange is new. He's new to the board and new to the, not new to the village as a resident, but he's the village clerk, planning board clerk, and zoning board clerk. And he's just beginning, so we'll all work together to get the notices.
I assume you'll get a model, or, you know, we can provide a model however you want to do it.
Fine, yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
Sounds good.
The next item of business is the application regarding 8 Layton Town Road.
Good evening, Chairman and the Board. My name is Radhika Nagwani. I'm the attorney for the applicant, Steven Ananda Temple. My address is 6 Concrete Road, New City, New York. Good evening. The applicant filed an appeal to you. It is a two-fold. We are requesting to review the determination of the building inspector and also to grant variance as recommended by the building inspector. First, we would like to address the issue of the determination by the building inspector. We believe the building inspector made erroneous determination based on the fact that my client is a religious corporation and has previously has a special permit to build a temple. And they had built the temple in 1996 based on a special permit at 8 Leyland Town Road in Hammond. They made a request to expand the temple, and the application was filed before planning board as a matter of fact before CAC on January 25th in the year 2023. And finally in June of this year, the building inspector made a determination as to the interpretation of the statute. In our application for expansion, the temple requested an enclosure around the temple premises to accommodate processions, religious processions, and also requested that a social hall be built in a separate building and on the second floor of it to be used as a monastery community living for the priests. Today I submitted an affirmation from the head of the religious committee of the temple, and I will provide a copy to the clerk so that it will become a part of the file. And I provide it to all the members of the board. There is a need for the priest to be on the premises, and I'm going to defer the response to the building inspector's determination to our engineer, and then I will come back and state why he made an error. If it is okay with the board.
Okay.
Thanks, Radhika. That's mine. Hello, good evening. Ramya Ramanathan, I'm planner for the applicant from Hadley Lancher Ziegler, located in New City, New York. So, before I proceed with actually your arguments regarding Mr. Zumo's memo, is there any questions on the site plan which we can help address, or we can just dive right into the memo? Any questions?
No, just to make myself feel old, I was on the planning board that did the landscape plan for the original construction.
Okay. All right. Okay, so, I mean, I can give you just a very quick overview because Radhika already went through it, but the site currently has a two-story community house of worship. There's a basement and a first floor. It totals to 15,000 square feet. The applicant is proposing an addition of 30,000 square feet to this structure, 15 in the basement, 15,000 square feet on the first floor. The basement would account for some offices, storage, some classrooms for weekend vocational lessons. And the first floor, there is no change to the prayer room or the sanctuary. The first floor is just going to be for a processional passage. There are some Hindu customs that require processions to take place during the winter months, and the applicants are hoping to get an enclosed space to do that, as opposed to doing it out in the open, especially December, January in frigid cold. So that's a 30,000 square foot addition for the community house of worship. In addition to that, the client is also proposing a social gathering hall and a monastery on the other side of the community house of worship. That totals out to 12,500 square feet. The social gathering hall is going to be on the lower floor, and the monastery that we're proposing is on the first floor. The monastery is intended to house up to 16 non-transient priests who may have family and children in some instances. What this expansion does effectively is brings down the parking by 20 spots, but we still exceed the board requirements on that. So that's as far as we've got with the site layout. We have been going back and forth with the TAG, and we've been at the planning board, and here we are. Now we received a determination from the building inspector dated May 14th, and there are some arguments in that letter that we'd like to clarify and set the record straight on. So I'd like to jump to that now if you think that's fine. Okay, so the first topic of things. So there are four major points I'd like to cover very quickly because I don't want to bore you with jargons. But the building inspector is claiming, the main point of contention here is that he claims the monastery we are proposing is actually a dormitory or a multi-family dormitory in some instances. Now there are many reasons why it's not that. Of course, being the village of Pomona Eco, which defines a dormitory, and this monastery would not fit that definition. So that's just right off the bat. A dormitory would typically generate revenue for an educational institution. This monastery is not set up to be a source of revenue for the abbot. This is a facility the client is willing to provide to its priests, so they're in close quarters to the community house of worship. The services of the priests are needed intermittently throughout the day, and them being on site just makes it a lot more easier for the community house of worship to function more efficiently. A dormitory usually has transient occupation. People living in a dormitory are not related to one another more than the mere fact that they happen to be in the same building. This is designed to be a monastery. It's purposely built to be one. People are will live here because they want to be guided by religious principles. They will be practicing their culture, their customs, and they want to live in a communal setting like this. This is very different than a dormitory. Our fourth point of contention would be that calling this a dormitory just because the layout and the form of the structure resembles a dormitory would prioritize form over function. It is designed, like I said, to function as a monastery. Just because it resembles a dormitory does not make it one. And there are iterations in the building inspector's memo that say that a monastery would typically house individuals, not families and, you know, people with children. My last point to that effect is that that is a very rigid understanding of what a monastery could be. In religions like the Africans, in Hinduism, a priest is allowed to be married, a priest is allowed to have children. And there are some ceremonies in the affirmation, if the board has the time later on to read it, the head priest is affirming that there are some rituals that only a married priest can perform. So this is all a part of monastic life as far as Hinduism is concerned. So that's our main point of contention, is that it has been designed to be a monastery, and we respectfully stand by that representation now. There are other mentions in the building inspector's memo. He does say that because the priests currently live off-site in multi-family housing, so this dormitory is going to be multi-family housing. That's not true. I mean, if one person moves from an apartment to a single-family home, they're now in a single-family home. The use changes if your location changes. If the type of this housing structure you're moving into changes. Another interpretation in the building inspector's memo, we just want to clarify that there are no commercial kitchens that have been represented. It's a regular kitchen. Food is going to be warmed here and circulated to get guests who come to the social gathering hall. It's for the temple patrons. So just to set the record straight, there is no commercial kitchen here. We have also not represented any individual living rooms per unit. That's not there. There's just one communal living room for the entire monastery. So again, that speaks to the communal way of life that would be a part and parcel of this structure. And lastly, the building inspector is assigning some restrictions to how the social gathering hall can be used. He goes on to say that if there are wedding receptions that happen here or other events and seminars, that would be commercial and would not be allowed in this social gathering hall. We respectfully want to submit that in a temple, if a wedding can happen, the social gathering hall on site should reasonably be able to accommodate a reception. We don't feel that's an unreasonable event to take place. But we have made it clear to DAC, this is not going to be rented out, not going to be released. There is not an economic revenue that's going to be generated from it. But using that social gathering hall for a reception for weddings seems a reasonable use from where we are coming. So in closing, there are some points that we do not agree with, which is why we are here appealing this interpretation. Well, we do agree with the building inspector. There are some engineering items that need to be fleshed out. We do need to provide a landscaping, a lighting plan, and all of that. And we're looking forward to get to that stage. But just right now, not knowing if this layout is going to proceed the way it's shown, we're a little hesitant delving into those details at this point. So at the end, we're just submitting to the board that if the board would be willing to consider allowing this proposed monastery to proceed as shown, that accommodation will go a long way in helping the priests, you know, up with the challenge that they're facing and have them on site and just make the functioning of the community house of worship much more efficient. So that's where we're coming from. Happy to address any questions that the board may have.
I've got just one question. You mentioned something in regard to the commercial use of the gathering hall.
Yeah.
I did not read the application or the submittals to be requesting any relief in that regard, at least as of yet. I thought that the interpretation that you were requesting, the appeal and interpretation, was confined to that second floor use regarding the monastery, the what you're calling a monastery.
Yes, you're correct, but because the building inspector's memo is noting this restriction specifically for the social gathering hall, we just wanted to make the record straight from where we are coming when we read that.
Okay, but just in terms of scheduling it for hearing, are you're setting the record straight, but are you asking for affirmative relief from the board on that on the gathering hall part of it, as opposed to the monastery use, or both?
Good evening, John Atzel, Atzel, Asher, and Ziegler, surveyors and engineers for the project. I believe that refers to Mr. Zumo's comment about the social hall being a commercial entity. And we're just letting the board know that it will not be a commercial entity. We're not looking for relief. We're just setting the record straight.
Okay, I see.
So you're just stating that you believe Mr. Zumo is incorrect in that assessment.
His assumption is incorrect, let's say.
And the applicant is not seeking a commercial use. It's only for the congregation members and the social gatherings, which is allowed by them.
So just so we're clear, so we're looking at both a use variance in terms of whether it's a monastery vis-a-vis a dormitory and an area variance because of the additions.
There are area variances which are noted in the bulk table, but those actually we haven't, you know, we made application to the planning board. No one's initiated seeker at this point, either the village board or the planning board. So we don't even know which board is going to be lead agent. It's either going to be the village board or the planning board.
Yeah, so
a lot of times the village board like to remain lead agent, or a lot of times they decide to kick it over to the planning board to be lead agent.
So a couple issues. First, I'll come back to seeker in a second.
Sure.
I didn't interpret it. Are you asking for a use variance, or are you asking for an interpretation?
If I may, the Pomona Building Code does not define what is a monastery is. Only the New York State Building Code defines what is a monastery. It defines the communal living space for people less than 16 people, 16 or under, and for non-transient people is considered as a monastery, as a convent. So this board can adopt the building code, the definition from the New York State Building Code. Since the Pomona Building Code doesn't have any definition for monastery use, that's what we are requesting. At this point of time, that's what we are requesting. And also, this board has an obligation to accommodate the religious corporation. And I just submitted an affirmation from the applicant, which outlines why it is necessary to have the priest living in a proximity, and also the reasons why they should be there. And those are all religious reasons. That is the reason why they are requesting that the monastery use be allowed.
So you're not looking for a use variance. You're challenging the interpretation. You're appealing the interpretation and asking the board to render an interpretation of the code that is such that it is a permitted use.
That's right. Excellent.
Understood. That's how I read the application as well.
Right.
At this point of time, at least we would like to know what the board is considering, and if we have to, we will ask for use variance. But at this juncture, since it is clear from the New York Building Code what is a monastery use, and there is no definition in the Pomona Code, and also Pomona Code says that any incidental and subordinate use to the main purpose, that is house of worship, is allowed. And our LUPA requests the board to accommodate a religious corporation. Putting all those together, this board should approve a monastery use. And if this board wants to put some conditions, how many people, according to the New York Building Code, 16 people are allowed to live. But if the board wants to reduce the amount, we are amicable to do that.
So, okay, so then now on the SECRA issue, it, you know, it raises a procedural, I'll call it conundrum, because if you're proceeding both as a, as an interpretation, on the interpretation, and for the area variances, SECRA is very different in its treatment of those two things. An interpretation is a type 2 action. This board can act, can hear, can have a hearing, can act on the interpretation, render a decision on the interpretation, without having to declare lead agency, without having to comply with SECRA. SECRA is deemed, it's deemed to not have any impact on the environment as being a type 2 action. The area variances are the opposite, however, because they are, the board is prohibited from acting until SECRA, the full SECRA process is complete, and we have multiple involved agencies. We have the village board, and we have the planning board, and we have this board. And, you know, the question is, how do you get through a SECRA issue with two very, like, the interpretation is, can you do it at all? And then the area variances are, you know, usually far into the, you know, or substantially into the planning process where there's already been, you know, some planning done and before the planning board and other places. And typically, not always, obviously, the planning board is the one that conducts the environmental review. It'll declare itself lead agency, not the zoning board. But each, you know, the review would typically be of the entire project, not just the, you know, the portions of it that are relevant here.
I understand. We are accept, it is acceptable to the applicant to proceed with the review process and put the variance in a balance and see where we need to go, whether we need to get the use variance or this board is willing to grant the monastery use.
That would be the first issue.
That would substantially simplify the procedural issues.
Yes.
And if you were to, you know, withdraw without prejudice the application for the area variances,
Do we need to withdraw it or can we put it on advance? Because we need to file again a million copies of everything, so can you?
If I may, as long as if it's on the record that we withdraw, we don't have to resubmit new application and everything at this point. Yes. Since the interpretation is type 2 and it's not going to be distributed to anybody else, would you agree?
I mean, it's cleaner if you withdraw without prejudice with the understanding that you could resubmit, you know, timely. A resubmission would not be deemed untimely down the road. That's cleaner. But I think, you know, I think it could be accomplished either way. I'd have to look at, is there a procedural barrier that would prevent it? But I think if you waived any, claim that the area variance portion of the application was not timely set down for a public hearing, then I think we could probably proceed holding it in abeyance, holding the area variances in abeyance and not hold a public hearing at the request and with the consent of the applicant.
Yes, the applicant will consent and waive the hearing requirement.
I'll be honest with you, I've not looked at any of those issues legally. It sounds like it could be done that way if you'll waive that. I can look at the issue in between meetings, but if you're okay with that and you waive any claim that, you know, the hearing is not timely and proceed now with a hearing only on the interpretation, I think my recommendation would be to the board, let's go ahead in that fashion and let's go ahead and schedule a public hearing on the interpretation request for next month or for, you know, for whenever it can next reasonably be held.
Actually, Rami just mentioned to me that the application that was submitted to this board only was for the interpretation.
No, we did amend it.
Actually, it's important. Let's take a look because that would solve it.
It is both.
I thought it was, right?
It is.
It is mentioned in the attorney's narrative, but it might not be in the application.
It is in the application.
Okay. You can check.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the...
It is in the application.
Yeah, the application packet itself, I don't really see it one way or the other, but obviously the packet is guided by the narrative that supports it, and the narrative addresses both.
Okay. Narrative, and also we did mark on whatever the sections where it was requesting variance.
On the form. Yeah, the application incorporates by reference the narratives, and the narratives address it, so that's...
Okay, understood.
Yeah. So we do consent to where the hearing requirements and the request that it be placed in abeyance. And while, in addition to that, we had to figure it out where will it go from here? Because the planning board is involved and the town board is involved. So there are several different boards that are involved.
Holding the area variances requested in abeyance substantially reduces the importance of that issue.
Right.
You know, we can proceed on the interpretation, and then at your own pace, if you wish to go back to the village board and the planning board in regard to any planning issues, that's up to you.
Is it possible, without giving a final decision, can this board make a recommendation in connection with the variance, area variance? Because the town board has authority to grant the variance. They probably want input from this board. Could that be done?
I don't believe the town board has authority to issue any variances. I think the sole board vested with that authority is the zoning board.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I think once you create a zoning board and you delegate the powers of the zoning board, then the zoning board is the exclusive holder of those powers. Otherwise, the village board would be overstepping its jurisdiction, in my view.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, it being the first meeting, does anybody else have anything else that they would like from the applicant before scheduling the public hearing? And if not, we can recommend...
In the papers, is there a copy of the New York State Building Code? With the applicable definition.
It's referenced in the architect's narrative, but the full text might not be there. But the code that pertains to this monastery is in the architect's narrative.
Has
in the architect's
sections, letter. But
yes, I saw that. That's
okay.
True.
That means I have to read through everything. I thought I gave that up when I retired. Okay.
So you need a motion?
Yes, so is there a motion to set this matter down for a public hearing at the next scheduled meeting on August 20th?
So moved. I'll second.
Motion by Mr. Klein, second by Mr. Baker. All in favor?
Aye.
Say aye. Aye. The motion carries 3-0.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for your time.
Can I just ask one more question? Because there was an error in terms of the area-wise. Building inspector stated it is 14,000 square foot, but it is about 12,000 square feet only. Can this board just amend it?
Which is only what's 12 instead of 14?
The accessory building for the social hall and the monastery is only 12,712 feet.
It's been clarified in the response letter that our office submitted. We in writing clarify the exact square footage, but he tends to reference the social gathering and monastery to be around 40,000 square feet. It's actually 12,700 and some change.
That distinction between 12,000 and change, 15,000 and change, he doesn't rely on that for any of his determinations.
Yeah.
It's just an error in the number.
Yeah.
You could just point that out and to the board.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, because we don't want to address all these issues in the public meeting, that's why I'm trying to resolve a couple of issues. Another one is we are requesting only, like she stated, only the catering kitchen. So he said we didn't provide for a commercial kitchen, so we are not requesting for a commercial kitchen. So do we need to address that already?
I don't think any of it has anything to do with the relief that you're seeking, right?
Yeah.
Right? And if it does, then that's fine. But if it doesn't, I mean, feel free to point it out to the board. I think you did in your responsive letter. I saw in part of the application.
Yes,
so, yeah.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Okay, thank you. You too.
Mr. Chair, members, Rebecca, just beg your indulgence on Bob Heights. We just seek clarification that, again, when we get the variance from the state, that this will move this proceeding. So we're trying to save time, so we may not need to go forward with the hearing on August 20th. I just want to be clear with your board to confirm that's the case.
Yeah, I think it's better to leave it as is. It can always be canceled and re-noticed if need be or something. But I think it's probably best to just leave it as is.
We're just trying to save time because I think once we get the state variance, there shouldn't be a need to go forward with the hearing.
I think does the state variance supersede anything the ZBA would do?
I it's a good question. It's kind of why I was asking the question in an open-ended fashion. I don't know what the answer is. Right, like the Department of State has a rule that says the temporary structures can't be in existence for more than 180 days. It's a state rule, and so this board can't give the variance from the state rule. And so that's why the applicant is before the state looking for a variance. The question is, if the state says, yes, you have a variance, are you requesting a variance for like a certain number of days or time from them, or is it just...
I think it's open-ended, I've confirmed, but that was the basis of the notice of violation that we're contesting, so it would seem that moots. The issuance of the variance is going to moot the notice of violation, that's what we're trying to...
It may, and I guess it all depends on what's in the variance when it's granted, and then how does the building inspector view it. Right, I think. Right, if for example, just by way of exaggerated example, if the state says you hereby have a variance, you can keep the tent up another 2 days. We're not moot, right? But if it says if it's indefinite, maybe it is. I don't know, but I guess let's see what it says, and then decisions can be made. I think my suggestion would be whenever you do get it, present it immediately to the building inspector and ask for, show it to him and then you'll be guided accordingly with regard to this board, I think. I'm guessing. Right? And do you have another view?
I would think to me it's a legal issue, so I present it to you, but when we get it, as soon as we get it, I'll be calling you first thing.
All right. I should do it to
give you an email.
Put it in both places. Give it to Mr. Zumo. You can give it to me.
Yep.
Better to have it in more hands than fewer.
So basically, the way it seems very clear that once we get this variance, it purely is a zoning issue, and it's not an issue at all because we have the variance from the state. So the building inspector is not really involved over here. It's really a zoning issue, and that's really what the question was before when you asked it. You said because this moves the whole issue, we're going to waste everyone's time with this because we didn't get clarity, but we all know that this moves the issue. This is not before the building inspector. This is before the state now because this is purely a zoning issue. And why should we go back and forth and have to now discuss something with the building inspector that's out of his realm? It's not even within his purview.
Well, the reality is you have a notice of violation that you've appealed from, and it remains valid until it's rescinded or overturned, right?
But it's stayed right now by virtue of the appeal.
Correct. Understood. It's stayed by virtue of the appeal. Again, playing it forward, I mean, we don't know. I think everybody's saying we're fully anticipating that the Department of State is going to grant the variance. We don't know, A, if they're actually going to do that. We think they are. B, we don't know, what it's going to say precisely. And C, we don't know what impact that's going to have on the building inspector. This board, I'm every zoning board that I advise, I am very careful to advise him to stay within your jurisdiction. So if the board, has jurisdiction, it can act. If it doesn't have jurisdiction, it won't. And I think none of us know. I know I raised the issue of mootness. I don't know definitively whether it would moot it or not. I haven't looked at the legal issue.
But I think, again, David, that goes to the point that I was saying. I think it's more of a legal issue than for the building inspector. Because, again, to the jurisdiction, I believe once we get this variance, there's not going to be any jurisdiction for the NOV, so therefore that will eliminate the board's jurisdiction.
I think let's take it one step at a time. I think we're living in the land of hypothetical until that comes, and then we can address whatever it's going to be. And that way, you know, look, let's say it says something, again, while we're living in the land of hypothetical, let's say the variance from the Department of State has wording in it that doesn't convince the building inspector to rescind the violation, or that doesn't render it moot, or renders it unclear whether it's moot. You're still going to want to be before this board. You're appealing something, and you're asking this board to grant relief from the notice of violation, right? So at least you're still continuing before this board. The board is continuing to have jurisdiction over it. Whether it chooses to grant the relief or not is a completely separate matter. It's a legal matter, and but I think, you know, all things considered, I think we're talking about a whole bunch of hypothetical scenarios that might happen. Let's see what does happen, and then let's make decisions from there.
Yeah, but basically what I'm saying is, let's just leave this in a very simple way. Let's say they send the email that they're sending the variance. They basically told us what the variance is going to be, so we know it. Now, it's true, it's hypothetical, but let's just come to a simple agreement that once we have the variance, we send it to you, you guys are going to see that the issue is moot, and then we can resolve it based on its moot. Not that we should live in limbo because it was hypothetical. We're certain this is not hypothetical. To the extent that our certainty is correct, just tell us that once we send this to you, you'll give us the decision that it's moot, and we could stop wasting everyone's time.
I, with all due respect, I'm not going to give anybody any opinions that anything's going to be moot until something happens that renders it moot. I have to analyze it. Your attorney has to analyze it. The building inspector has to analyze it.
That's not what I said. That's not what I said. Let me clarify. I'm not asking you to make a decision. I'm telling you, I'm saying that we should come to an agreement that if we send you this variance and the variance does move the issue, that you could respond and say that the issue is moot.
I can't do that. I mean, that's a separate request for relief. I'm saying you have an application. Right now, this board has jurisdiction over one thing and one thing only, your current application. Okay, and it can do one thing and one thing only. It can either, it has a choice, either schedule a hearing or not schedule a hearing. It's chosen to schedule a hearing. That hearing's on in August. And if something happens in between that changes that, well then, you know, that'll be for your attorney to present to the village, whether it's me and or this board and or Mr. Zumo. We'll see. I mean, there's nothing that we can agree to or decide upon here until something happens. There's no jurisdiction of this board to agree to anything. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I understand it, and I appreciate your position. But I think, you know, this board has a very tight realm of jurisdiction that it can act within. And right now, it's acting within that jurisdiction, and it's proceeding in the only way that it can. And I think let's continue that until something changes. When it changes, then it can, you know, whatever impact that may have can be reevaluated at that time.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
We appreciate the indulgence. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. There being no further business before the board, this meeting is adjourned.
Need a motion?
Sure. Is there a motion to adjourn? Moved by Mr. Baker. Seconded by Mr. White. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion to adjourn, 3-0.
Ellen,
can you
get me on
the
mailing list
for the next round? We can have these things emailed. Yes, you see, Moshe right there will be, he is the worthy keeper of all things, all emails and data. And
if I don't get it, I don't know about it.
Yes. Moshe, would you please add Mr. Klein to the distribution list for everything?
Absolutely.
You have my phone number. Can we go back to just some regular pool applications?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's making my brain hurt.
Moshe, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Would it be possible the next time something comes across your desk that has come here?
At the right time. I could you email it to us? I spent some time looking at it.
It's like a Steve before he arrived.